All right, we're holding by the beginning of the Gemara on Tzadik Tes Amud Beis. To recap the Mishnah, the Mishnah had talked about about a number of different cases where we have children who were not sure. There were two women who had babies, and one case was two women had babies and were not sure which one is whose baby. We have the case with a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law, so therefore we have issues with Yibum and Chalitza. Then the Mishnah had gone on to a case where you have a kohenes, the wife of a kohen, and her shifcha, where each of them had a child. The two children are mixed up, and so to begin with, you have one of them is a kohen and one of them is an eved. Eventually, one of them frees the other one, as the Gemara will talk about, that they have to actually. And then you have the various dinim that apply to them, because we're not sure on each of them whether he's a kohen or an eved meshuchra, which is effectively a yisra. So the Mishnah had mentioned Meisu Aksherim Mechula. The Mishnah had mentioned the case in the first scenario where you have the mother-in-law and the daughter-in-law who had children. We have the case that of the Aksherim, meaning the ones each of these women had children of her own, which we know for a fact are her children. They're not the ones who were born in hiding and got mixed up. So if they die, then you have the question of who can do Yibum versus who can do Chalitza. We said that when it comes to the wives of the children of the mother-in-law who might potentially one of these bnei tarubis might be their brother or might be their nephew, so they have to do chalitza. They can't do yibum because the nephew is not allowed to marry his aunt. On the other hand, the other way around, when it comes to the wives of the children of the daughter-in-law, where then again the sfeikas are either it's their brother or their uncle, and they can one of them does chalitza and the other one can do yibum, because no matter what, you're good. If it's a brother, you can do yibum, and if it's an uncle and a niece, an uncle's allowed to marry you. Now, but the mission had used the word meisrak shevin, the expression meisrak shevin, that the kosher ones die. So the question is, what? Elahanach v'shum di'ir of who have a psulim. So what are we saying? The other ones who got mixed up of psulim, they're not posul. Nobody did anything wrong over here. There was a mix-up. Oh, but Papa, you're right. Emo meso vadoyim. You're right. It doesn't mean kshedim as in the sense kshedim versus psulim. It just means the vadoyim, the ones who are definitely the children of so-and-so versus the ones who were not sure which one is which. And the Mishnah had said, v'nei akala echad cholot cholot, that when it comes to... So the Mishnah had mentioned that Levnei Akpala Echad Cholot Cholot, that as far as the children of the daughter-in-law, where these tzveikis, one of them is their brother and one of them is their uncle. So we said one of them does chalitza and the other one does yibum, and that way we're covered on all grounds. If the one who did chalitza is the brother, then they're allowed to marry whoever they want. And if the one who did the chalitza is the uncle, chalitza from an uncle is meaningless anyway, so then they're doing yibum with their brother-in-law. And again, just like we had with the previous Mishnayos, it has to be done in that order. First chalitza, first one of them does chalitza, then the other one can do yibum. You can't say the other way around, first one will do yibum, then the other one will do chalitza. Because again, you have the same problem. Might turn out the one who's marrying her is not her brother-in-law, but rather her uncle, or her uncle-in-law, rather, whatever, which then is yivam al-shuk. She's not allowed to marry him until she has chalitza. Then the Mishnah had mentioned Kehenes Shinis Adav Vecholot, and the Mishnah had started talking about that case of the Kehenes and her Shivcha, whose children were mixed up. And one of the things the Mishnah had mentioned is that Chilkin Chelek Echad Bagoden, that they get one portion in the granary. When they go to the Goden, where the grain is being threshed or whatever, to collect their Truma, they get one portion. Question is, of course they get one portion. Obviously, what are we saying? Both of them are allowed to eat truma because one's a kohen and one's an eved. We just don't know which one is which. But there's no reason to think that they should get any more than one portion. The answer is, you're right. We don't mean they get one portion. We mean that only if the two of them come together do we give them a portion of truma. But if one of them comes without the other, we don't give them anything. Because, as the Gemara is going to discuss in a minute, there is an opinion. We have the opinion of Rabbi Huda, who says that if an eved of a kohen comes to the granary, we don't give him truma on his own. We only give him if his master comes with him. And we'll talk about it in a minute why. We may mention it briefly, but we're going to get into it now. The main sugya about it actually is in Sugis. We'll get to it in a second. Just one thing to point out about this chelak echad pshita, there are other mafoshim who explain that actually the point of the Gemara's question is a little bit different. Where do we ever find that? Where do we ever find that there's a specific portion that a kohen is supposed to get anyway? Chelak echad implies that there's a certain specific amount you're supposed to give, and they just share in that. Who says there's a specific portion? Who says there's a specific amount you give to the kohen anyway? And that's what we're saying. That what it means is you only give it to them if they come together. Thus we see that our Mishnah holds according to the opinion, which is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, that you only give truma to an Eved if his master is with him. Because what's going to happen otherwise, the point according to Rabbi Yehuda is, if you give truma to the Eved without his master being there, people may think he himself is a Kohen. And you don't want people to do that. The Tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, Ein chok in truma la'eved elem ken rabba yimer, jivir Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says precisely that. You don't give truma to an eved unless his master is with him, to avoid such mitzvah. Rabbi Yossi says no. Yachol shi yimer, because the eved can say, after all, im koyin ani tenuli b'shvil asmi. Look, if I'm, in this case, these two boys, where each of them, one of them is an eved and one of them is a koyin, we don't know which one is which. So look, each one of them can say, if I'm a koyin, tenuli b'shvil asmi, then give me on my own behalf. And if not, if I'm an Eved, then I'm still entitled to eat Truma because I have a master who's a Kohen.
Either way, I can eat
Truma. So what's the point of the Machlokas? The Gemara points out. Where Rabbi Yehuda lived, they held that based on the fact that a person is eating, is being given truma, you can assume that he's miyuchas. You can assume that he's a kohen. Whereas in Rabbi Yossi's place, they did not do that. So Rabbi Yossi doesn't have a problem with giving him truma. Nobody's going to think he's a kohen on that basis, because in Rabbi Yossi's area, they anyway would not do that. Because he could be an eved, right.
And in Rabbi Yehuda's
place, they would. They would assume if a person is being given truma on his own, means he's a kohen. So that's the reason for the machlokes. Tanya, we learn in a braisa. Amar Rabbi Elazar bar Tzadik, miyamei lohei adti ala edus echad. In all my life, I only ever said edus one time in Beis Din. Or maybe he means edus in general, or maybe he means specifically edus. Maybe he means specifically edus about yuchsin, I don't know. Whatever it was, the Helu Eved Likurun Alpi, and they declared an Eved to be a Kohen based on my Aegis. What do you mean? Helu Sakhadat? What do you mean? They actually raised up an Eved and claimed that he's a Kohen based on Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik's Aegis. How could that be that the Eved would allow such a thing to happen to a Tzadik? Hashta behemta shall tzaddikim ein hakadosh baruch hu mevit hakol al yodon. We find that even the animal of a tzaddik, the Eved doesn't cause anything bad to happen through it. The famous story of Pinchas ben Yair's donkey, that his donkey wouldn't eat from food that meiser hadn't been taken from it. Tzaddikim atzal I told you again. How much more so the Eved protects tzaddikim from such things happening? Now, Tosfos, by the way, says there's no reason to have that in the Gemara over here. Tosfos discusses in a few places in the Gemara. The fact is, we have many times in the Gemara where we find that a tzaddik ended up doing something wrong by mistake. We had, for example, the story in Shabbos with Rabbi Shmuel, who thought that I can read by candlelight on Shabbos and I won't put out the candle, and he adjusted or whatever, and he accidentally did, and he wrote down after Shabbos that I have to bring a chatos. We have many such cases. So Tosfos establishes in a few places that this rule, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu behem, maybe takala ayet tzadikim, only applies to matters of eating and drinking. The Ebishter will never allow a tzaddik to accidentally eat or drink something that is offered, because that the food becomes dama basa kipsara, and it's a derogatory thing, it's a gnai, that a tzaddik's body should be made up out of a dvar isur. But here we're not talking about anything else possible. So Tosfos says you shouldn't be good at this line over here. On the other hand, other Mephoshim say, I think the Aruch Haner says, that no, the difference is, true, when we're talking about the Tzaddik himself, it's true, like Tosfos says, the Eved only protects him from Macholos Asuras, but not necessarily anything. But here we're talking about something that there's going to be a Tekola to other people. Other people are going to end up doing an Aveda because of this. Other people are going to think that this person is a Kohen, when really he's an Eved, and various consequences are going to come out of that. That the Eved is not going to allow to happen through a Tzaddik, because to be Machti Aserabim is a serious thing. Anyway, so we're still back to the question, what does Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik mean that he gave Eidus, and because of it, he gave Eidus on a certain person that is a Kohen, really he was an Eved, And because of that, they wound up declaring him a kohen. How would the Eved still allow that to happen? Ela im bichshu lahalos eved lekohen al pi. No, what Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik means, they were going to raise him up. They were going to declare him a kohen on the basis of my Eved. Except that then in the end, somebody else came. Either somebody else came and said that not, that he's an Eved, or they realized that the Eved was wrong. What happened? How did Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik make this mistake? Chaza ba'astri did Rabbi Yosi. We just said that there was a difference in minhag between Rabbi Yossi's and Rabbi Yehuda's areas. Whether if a person is being given truma on his own, do we assume that he's a kohen now? So what happened? Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik one time was in Rabbi Yossi's city. He saw this person being given truma, but also va'asid ba'asid Rabbi Yehuda. Then he didn't realize apparently that in Rabbi Yehuda's place the minhag is different. So he went in Rabbi Yehuda's place and he said, he didn't say the man's a kohen. He when they were discussing in Rabbi Yehuda's city, is this what they're trying to figure out, is this person a kohen? Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik comes and gives edus. You know what? I one time saw them giving him truma. He didn't realize that there's a difference between Rabbi Yossi's and Rabbi Yehuda's place, and that's why they were about to be mala him lakuna on that basis. Except I guess that then they realized that there was a mistake over here, that where you saw it happen was in Rabbi Yossi's city, so therefore it's no proof. Tanarabon, we learn in a braisa. Asora ein chokin lahem truma beveis agronis. There's ten types of people who you do not give them truma in the granaries. Normally the kohenim go out normally when the baal batim are finished threshing and processing and whatever their tavur. Then the kohenim come out to the granaries outside the city and they collect their truma from there, and the levim collect their maaser and so forth. There's ten types of people that you don't give them their truma over there. The Elohim. Cheresh shoyt of a cotton. And we'll explain. The Gemara will start explaining in a minute why these 10 are the exceptions. So cheresh shoyt of a cotton. What kind of cotton we're talking about over here? Rashi says cotton over here means the usual definition. Somebody who a boy who doesn't yet have shteis iris. Tosfos says that Tosfos discusses that not, but actually it could be it must be an even younger cotton than that, because we do find the Gemara in Sukkah that implies that once a boy is old enough to be able to duchen, then he's old enough to be given truma on his own. Anyway, tumtum v'androgynous, the fourth and fifth are tumtum and androgynous. We've had the definition of many times already. V'eved, a slave, according to Rabbi Yehuda. V'isha, a woman. V'ha'orol, a kohen is an orol, and we're talking about an orol. Rashi says shemesu echav machas milah, the famous case where his brothers had bris milah and therefore they died, and therefore he doesn't have a bris milah because it would be dangerous for him. V'atame, a kohen is tame. And the tenth one, but noisi isha she'enei hagenis lo, a kohen who marries a woman who is possible to him. Enei hagenis literally means that she's improper, so like a grusha or a chalala or what have you. A kohen is not allowed to marry them, but because he married her, therefore we don't give him truma in the granaries. V'cholon m'shagrin lahem levateim. Now among these 10, it's true we don't give it to them out there in the field, but we will send them the truma to their house. So we will give them truma. In other words, we just don't give it to them in the granaries. Chutz mitomei v'noitzi ishishen hagenisloi, except for the tomei and the kohen who married a woman that he's not allowed to. Actually, the Rambam also adds the oral, that you don't give truma, that you don't even send truma to the oral at home either. Rashi over here says you do give it to the oral over here, and fine, he himself can't eat truma, but his family can eat it. We learned in the previous parak that the oral's family is allowed to eat truma. The Rambam leaves out the oral, and the Kesef Mishnah has a problem with that. Our Gemara doesn't mention the oral, so evidently the Rambam had a different gisa. And the reason why the Rambam would hold differently is because we learned previously, when we learned about a month ago, the sugya about an oral and truma, we learned that Rabbi Akiva holds that an oral is exactly like a tummy. So therefore, we're saying that you don't send truma to the tummy, even though again he himself can't eat it, but his family could. But the Gemara is going to say in a minute why we don't send it to the tummy. Then the Rambam holds the same thing, the oral. Anyway. So let's go through the 10 of them. Bishleim a cheresh shoyt of a cotton. I understand why you don't give truma to the cheresh shoyt of a cotton out in the field. Lav b'nei de ninu. They don't have deya, and therefore Rashi says it's like a derogatory thing to the truma to give them truma in front of everybody when they don't have proper deya.
You need deya to be yotze truma. Or?
Not to be yotze truma. Not so much to be yotze, but it's a gnai to the truma to give it to somebody who doesn't have deya. because truma is an important thing. It's a holy thing. You should be giving. So Tosfos discusses the issue. Tosfos discusses, yeah. You don't give something precious.
To...
Yeah, but
also precious.
What?
By refusing to give it.
You're not refusing to give it to him. You send it to his house. Which Tosfos points out, we have to be talking about that they have an apotropos, they have a caretaker in the house who's going to be able to make sure that it stays far, because otherwise you can't give truma to a chereshoy to a cotton anyway, otherwise because they're going to make a tummy. There is, by the way, a big discussion among the achroinim, the Ktsois talks about it, and the Nesivas, and a few others about the details of how can we say anyway that you could give it, that you could give truma to a cotton. A cotton can't be zoicha. So how are you being mekayim mitzvah of giving truma to them? So there's a few different possibilities. One way of looking at it is the mitzvah is not really the giving. The mitzvah is that the kohen should have it, so therefore the cotton can be zoicha in it on that behalf in that way, or that he has a special ability to be zoicha in it because he has the mitzvah of eating truma, etc. Next, tumtum vandrogus nami. I understand why you don't give truma to the tumtum vandrogus in the granaries buried with nathman, you know, because they're a creature of their own. They're like neither male nor female. And again, it's a gnai to truma to be giving it to somebody. It's a gnai to the kodship to be giving it to somebody like that who's always like a doubtful situation. Eved nami, and then the eved we understand also why you don't give truma to him right there in the granaries, like we said before, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Duma ofi lastukum et truma liyuchsin, because people may see him getting truma, think that he's really a kohen of his own rather than just the eved of a kohen, and then he's going to wind up. People are going to wind up thinking he's a kohen. Aro v'tome mishum demi'isi. Next, the aro and the tome, we don't give them truma in the granaries, and according to the Rambam, we don't even send truma to either of them at home. Mishum demi'isi, because they're miustic. The fact that even though, okay, it's not the guy's fault that he's an aro, but still, an aro is a miustic thing, it's a disgusting thing. Truma is also a repulsive thing, so therefore, okay. And no
it's terrible. I mean, if he becomes circumcised, then...
Okay, yeah, indeed. And if he becomes tahor, then also, yeah. And noisa isha shehene, again, it's mishum knasa. And we understand why you don't give truma to the guy who married a woman who's also to him, because it's a knas. The chum can't to him. As long as he's married to her, then we're not going to give him truma. Ella, so far we've covered 9 of the 10 cases. Ella isha my time aloy, but why shouldn't you give truma to a woman over there in the granaries? What's the problem? She's allowed to eat truma.
Can he be counted in a minyan? Is he fine or married to...
He can be counted a minion, but whether he can be called to the Torah as a Kohen, I think the halacha is that no. I think the halacha is we deny him any of the privileges of a Kohen as long as he's married to her. Ella isha my time aloy, so why don't you give truma to a woman there in the granaries in the fields? Please give a papa for one bread of Isha. So we have a machloikis. We learned about this actually a couple of weeks ago when we had the sugya of a Kohen and his wife and whatever eating truma. One of them says that the problem is, what if she gets divorced, and then you're going to give her truma, not realizing that she was divorced, and she's not allowed to at that point. She's a zara. Which we learned over there, by the way, that even if she herself is a bas koyin and married to a koyin, which then there shouldn't be an issue with that, because either way she's allowed to eat truma then. Nevertheless, loy plug, we don't want to make distinctions between one woman and another. The other one says the problem is yichud. Out there in the fields, you don't necessarily have a lot of people. You're going to have the balabas there with this pile of grain. You're going to have this woman who's going to wander out over there to get the truma. There's going to be a problem of yichud. So the question is, my binayu, what's the practical distinction? And the answer is between the two reasons. Either way, you don't give her truma. So what's the difference? The answer is ikka binayu ki beidori dimakar of lamasa v'lo shchichi buinchi. Number one, what if it's a granary which is near the city? And there are not very many people there. So you don't have the problem of grusha, because what's the problem? The guy out there in his field, a couple of hours walk from the city, may not have heard that in town this woman was divorced. But if the granary is right near the city, he'll have heard. So he'll know she's a grusha. On the other hand, you have the problem of yichud, because you don't have a lot of people there. Or you could have the other way around. It's far away, so he may not have heard she's a grusha, but you have many people there, so there's no issue of yichud. The Rambam actually paskins both of these reasons. The Rambam mentions both of these reasons, which means that if it's one or the other, it's still a reason to not give her truma. Now, we said b'cholin meshagrin lehan levatei, and we said that of all these 10 people, we do send them truma to their house. So the guy can take the truma, send it with a messenger or a servant or whatever to the woman's or the cottons or the trum trums or whatever house. chutz mitame benoitze ishishen again, like, except for the tame and except for the kohen who married a woman that he's not allowed to. So, which implies aval oro mashagrinale, which implies the oro we do send to. Now, obviously, this is where the Rambam had a different gear, though, because he would have to take out this line. Otherwise, how do you say the oro yidam? My time of mishum to onis. Why? Because the oro is an onus. It's not his fault he doesn't have a bris milah.
The Rambam, what do we do?
So the Rambam, either the Rambam would take out this line, or the Rambam would say that our Gemara is not la halacha, is not a liberty hilchasa, because the halacha would be like Rabbi Akiva's opinion that an oral and a tomei are exactly the same thing, and therefore if the tomei you don't send to, then the oral you also don't. So my time of Hashem to honest, because the oral is an honest. The question is, tomei nami ha honest? Okay, the tomei is also an honest. He didn't necessarily become tomei on purpose. Well, the answer is, high nofish einsei, high lo nofish einsei. The oral has a big onus. It's a danger to his life if he gets a bris milah. The Tomei, yes, maybe he became Tomei by accident, but it was careless of him. He should have been more careful not to become Tomei. We're talking Meisur Achamachos Milah, yeah.
Right.
No, obviously, if he's an oral because he doesn't want to, because he refuses, that's different. Then he's a mumer anyway. That's a whole other issue. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in another Braisa, Ha'evet Va'isha Ein Chokin Lam Truma Beit HaGronis. We do not give out Truma to a slave or woman in the Beit HaGronis, as we just said. However, continues the Braisa, Uvamakam Shachokin, but in a place where they do give out, Noisman Le'isha Tchilo Upoitu Noisam Yad. Then you give first to the woman and you send her away immediately. You don't make her wait. The question is, my comma. What do you mean, in a place where you give? You just finished saying you don't give to women in the granary, you send it to their house. So what do you mean, in a place where you do? So, before Shem asks back on that, what is the Gemara asking exactly? We just said there's two possible reasons why you shouldn't give it to her. Let's say neither of those reasons apply. It's a granary that's near the city, so they'll know whether she's a Gurusha or not. And there's plenty of people there, so there's no issue of Yichud. Why would you not give? And the answer is, the Mefarshim says, like the Ritva says, since the Braith is using the expression generically, you do not give them truma, period, without specifying any reason, it implies forget about reasons and not reasons.
That's,
you know, right. It's a blanket statement. So now the question is, what does the Braith mean? Where you do? The answer is hachikama. What it means is like this, but mokum shechokin maisa oni, in a place where they give out maisa oni. Now maisa oni, Rashi points out, unlike truma and maisa rishon, which are given in the granary out in the field, maisa oni is given in the house.
The granary is out in the field.
Yeah, you have your field nearby. There you have a granary where you take the weeds and thresh it.
Or
there.
A little.
It's far away. It's outside the city.
Uncovered.
A granary would be, it'd be like, no, not necessarily uncovered. It would be a building of some kind, but whatever, like a silo or something. Silo or whatever, yeah. But the mitzvah only is given out in the balabas's actual house. Two reasons, Rashi says. Number one, you have a pasuk. You have a pasuk that mentions that is given in the house. And number two, you don't want to embarrass the poor people by forcing them to schlep all the way out there.
That before.
Yeah, we may mention. Anyway, so when you're giving out mice oni noisin la'ishit chila, then that you give to a woman first. Tosfos points out, by the way, that there's a difference. There's actually different kinds of maisa oni. Some kinds of maisa oni are indeed given in the house, but sometimes there is a kind that's actually not really given out in the granary, but you leave it there and the poor people come and take it themselves. So obviously, if we're talking about over here, b'makom shechokin, it has to be in the house, because in the granary you would never be giving out maisa oni, you'd be leaving it for them to take themselves. Anyway, so when it's in the house, noisin le'ishet chila, that you give to a woman first. My time, Mishum Zivosa, because otherwise it's a bazillion for her that she should have to stand around waiting to get. You want to finish with her and let her go home recovered right away.
And you have several women. What do you do?
Then you one after the other. But whatever. At least you should do the women before the men. Ladies first. Amar Rava, in this connection, Meresha, originally, Kihavu also Gabra Itzel Ladina Kamoi, if there were two people waiting for a din Torah by me, one a man, one a woman, we're not talking about din Torah against each other, we're talking about two different din Torah. One, the plaintiff is a man, one the plaintiff is a woman. Have assured in the figure of the Gabra Beresha, then I used to take care of the din Torah of the man first. I finish with that and then take care of the woman. Because I figured, Amina, the Mechayev and Mitzvah. I figured the man is Chayev and Mitzvah, therefore he has a higher degree of Kedusha. There's a mission in Hodias that mentions there's a whole hierarchy there's a whole hierarchy among the Jewish people. A Kohen Gadol is ahead of a Sgan. A Sgan is ahead of a Mashiach Mochama. A Kohen is ahead of a Levi, who's ahead of Yisrael, who's ahead of a Mamzer, etc., etc.
Only in Kedusha.
But in other words, it comes up in a number of things. It comes up in a number of things. It comes up, for example, if you find two lost objects, for example, one belongs to a Kohen, one belongs to a Yisrael, you take care of returning the Kohens first.
Even today?
I think so. I'm not sure if it applies nowadays, but I think so. It has to do with also, for example, if you have Pidyon Shvuyim and you have one versus the other, which one you do first? There's many different cases. So. I figured, Rava says, a man has more mitzvahs, therefore he's on a higher level, therefore you should take care of his din Torah first. Or one of the Mefarshim says the idea is that Rava figured, since a man has more mitzvahs, better we should dispose of his din Torah faster, that way he can get back to doing his mitzvahs. Kivin d'shmain alaha, but once I heard this explanation of the Braisa that we see that by Maisa Oni you have the woman go first. So then I take care of the woman's case first. My time of Zilusa. Same reason, because of her covet. It's not for covet that she should have to be waiting around the based in Shtibel and for her case. So finish her off with her case first, send her home, and then you can take care of the men's cases. Then the Mishnah, going back to the Mishnah continued with this case of the Kohenet and the Shivcha, whose children were mixed up, and we didn't know which one is which. We said that, among other things, they're not allowed to neither of them is allowed to get married, because the women a Kohen is allowed to marry are only a Kohenet, a Levi, or a Yisraelis. The women an Eved is allowed to marry is only a Shivcha or a Mamzeret, so there's no overlap. But then the Mishnah continued, Higdilu Ataru, it's called that when these two boys grow up, and they free each other, then they're both going to be allowed to marry women who are mutzlukavuna. Because at that point, an Eved Meshuchra can also marry a Bas Koyin, a Bas Levi, or a Bas Yisrael.
Okay.
Yeah. So the question is, what do you mean, Shichra? What does he mean? The expression Shichra implies, if he's Meshachra him, if each of them is Meshachra the other, then good. What do you mean, if they want, if they don't want? Vamai. We have the same problem as a Chetzi Shichra, as a Chetzi Eved, a Chetzi Ben Chorin, where we said earlier in the Masechta, or actually we learned it Chagiga. Lista Shivcha any Yachol, Bascharin any Yachol. Neither of them is able to marry a Shivcha, neither of them is able to marry a Bascharin, and because of that, we learned then there was a Machloek with the Shammai Bishilo, where in the end Bishilo conceded to Beit Shammai, that yes, in that case, you have to force the master to free the slave. Same idea over here. Amar Rava, you're right. Ema Kofin Oysen and Mashachrin Zezzeh. You're right. When the Mishnah says Mashachrin Zezzeh, that doesn't mean to imply that if they want to, they could. It means that the Beis Din will force them to. And that way both of them will be able to get married. And the Mishnah had mentioned...
That's the case when he's half and half.
And then the Mishnah had gone through a bunch of cases, a bunch of dinim that apply to these people who are Suffolk Kohen and Suffolk Yisrael. And the last thing the Mishnah had said is Noisnalein Chumre Chola. That the Mishnah had said you apply to them the Chumras of Kohenim and the Chumras of Yisraelim. So the question is Lamai Hilchza. In what connection? I mean, all the other things that we're talking about, that they can't become Tamil Mass, and that the business about Truma and the business about Kodshim, etc. The Mishnah covered all those. What else is there that's left out? Amar Papa, Lamin Chasem Nikmetis. To understand the next piece, we have to know. The Torah says like this: the usual way it works with Korban Mincha is a Yisrael or a Levi brings a Korban Mincha. The Kohen takes out a scoopful, a handful of the flour, the Kohen, you burn that on the Mizbeach, and the rest of the Mincha is eaten by the Kohenim. On the other hand, with a Minchas Kohen, when a Kohen brings a Kohen Mincha, no Kmitzah is done, and you take the entire Mincha and burn it on the Mizbeach. One of the Kohenim, yeah, takes the whole Mincha and puts it on the Mizbeach and burns it. The problem is over here, we have these people who were not sure, each of them, if he's a Kohen or Yisrael. What do we do as far as their Mincha? So Amar Papa, l'minchasam nikmetes k'minchas Yisrael. It means that we take a k'mitzah from their mincha just as if they were Yisrael. Ve'en an echelas k'minchas koyinim. But we don't eat the mincha as if just in case they're a koyin. A koyin mincha is not eaten. It's supposed to be burnt on the mizbeach. Okay, so what do? Ha'koyimetz kore ba'atzmo. You bring the koyimetz on the mizbeach by itself. Ba'ashirayim kreven ba'atzman. And then you bring the rest of the shirayim, the rest of the mincha, by itself on the mizbeach. And that way you're covered. If it was a Yisrael's mincha, you did kmitzah. And if it was a Kohen's mincha, then the whole thing's been burnt. Problem is, how can you do that? Ikri kan, don't we apply over here the pasuk? Kol shemenu la'ishim harayu b'val taktiru. The pasuk describes, the pasuk in Parshas Vayikra mentions that you're not allowed to bring tichol tzor b'chol devash le'taktiru b'menu isha l'ashem. Right? But we also learn, besides from the simple meaning of the pasuk, that you're not allowed to bring tzor and vash on the mizbeach, we also learn another din from it. Le'taktiru b'menu isha l'ashem, which means anything where part of it is meant to be isha l'ashem, the rest of it you're not allowed to offer on the mizbeach. So in this case, you have, let's say it was a regular Yisrael's mincha. You take out the koimetz from it and burn that on the mizbeach. That you're supposed to do. If you take any of the rest of it, which is supposed to be eaten by the kohenim, and burn that on the mizbeach, you're being over on this lav. So how can you do that over here? You're saying the guy is maybe a suffolk kohen, and therefore you have to burn the rest of his korban on the mizbeach, but what if he's a Yisrael, and then you're being over on this lav? Kol shemenu la'ishim, anything where part of it is supposed to be burnt on the fire, harei b'val taktiru, then you have the issur that you're not allowed to burn it on the mizbeach. Amar of Yehuda, b'rei of Shimon Pazi, you're right, in this case, demasklu l'shem eitzim. What you do is, in this case, you do take the rest of the mincha and burn it on the mizbeach, but not having in mind that you're doing it as like you would do with the mincha of a kohen, that you're bringing it as a korban, but rather you're burning it on the mizbeach as if it was firewood. And you can do that, like Rabbi Elazar says. Rabbi Elazar, like Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar, actually. Tanya Rabbi Elazar, Omer. The pasuk continues over there. After that pasuk that we just quoted, the pasuk continues. Korban reishis le'takruvu takruvoizim Hashem ve'elam mizbeach lo yalu l'reach nichoyach. You're not allowed to bring him on the mizbeach for reach nichoyach, for a sweet smell. Kabiyachol fashim reach nichoyach. The famous thing Rashi says on the pasuk over there, nachas ruach afanai shamarji v'nachsu returning. The Eved Kabiyachol has nachas ruach that he commanded us, and we do his mitzvah. But you're allowed to, Rabbi Eliezer is saying, these things, like sa'ur and vash, you're not allowed to bring them on the mizbeach as a korban, that would be an iser, but you are allowed to burn them on the mizbeach as firewood. So you do the same thing over here. L'reach nichayach i'atamal, you cannot bring these things on the mizbeach as reach nichayach, as an actual korban, avalatamal, the shabetim, but you bring them on, you're allowed to bring them on the mizbeach as if, and think of them as firewood. So that's what you do with the remainder of the mincha over here. You take the koimetz of the mincha and burn that on the mizbeach. That has to be burnt on the mizbeach either way. You take the rest of it, and the kohen thinks to himself, not I'm doing this as I would do a minchas kohen, but rather I'm doing this just as firewood. And that way, if it was Yisrael's mincha, then fine, you're allowed to do it as firewood, according to Rabbi Eliezer. And if it's a kohen's mincha, okay, but it's been burnt. The problem is, okay, Hanichal Rabbi Eliezer, El Rabbanan Ma'ikal Meimah, knew, what do you do according to the Rabbanan who don't hold of that distinction? The answer is, the Avad Lach Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon. Fine, in that case, according to the Rabbanan, you would instead do like Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon holds. D'tanya, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, Omer, he's talking about a different case, actually. There's a machloikus between Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon and his father. Now, this that we just mentioned, that a Kohen's Mincha is completely burnt on the Mizbeach. Now, besides for the two kinds of mincha that a person can bring, the usual kind of mincha a person brings is a minchas nedava. I volunteer to bring a mincha. That's the kind we're talking about where a kohen's mincha gets burnt completely on the mizbeach, according to everybody. The question is, what about, you have a different case where you have a case called a korban ola v'yoreh. There's three or four cases where the Torah says that instead of bringing a regular chatas for certain avedas, instead you bring an adjustable value chatas. If you can afford it, if you're rich, you bring an animal, or you bring a sheep or a goat or whatever as a chatas. If you can't afford that, you bring two birds, one is a chatas, one is an ola. And if you can't even afford that, you bring a korban mincha. Dalai dalos, the poorest of the poor. That mincha is called a minchas choyte, and it has different rules than a regular minchas. The question is, does the same rule apply to it if it's a kohen of minchas choyte? It's a mincha that's in place of a chatas. It's called a korban ola v'yoreh. He's bringing it because of an avera that he did. And the rules for it are a little different than a regular korban mincha. For example, a regular korban mincha, you mix oil together with the flour and you put incense on top of it. Levina. A minchas choyte, you don't do either of those things.
Why do you bring the carbon?
You bring the carbon because you can't afford anything more. And there's various cases. Tumas Mishnah Shvikachov, Shavuos Bitui, there's a few cases. Yeah. So anyway, now so the machlokes between Reb Shimon and Reb Elazar Reb Shimon, what happens with this? If the person who did the Saveira is a Kohen, do you treat it as if it was a regular Yisrael's mincha that you bring it in two parts? You bring the koymetz on the mizbeach and then you burn the rest of it on the mizbeach, or That's what Reb Shimon says. Reb Elazar of Reb Shimon says that no, what you do actually is you take the koymet of this minchas chayte, who is a koyin, you put that on the mezbeach, just like if it was a Yisrael.
Right.
The rest of it, though, instead of burning it on the mezbeach, what you do is you throw it on the beis hadeshen. You throw it on the place, you put it on the floor where they would take the ashes that they took every day off the mezbeach, turumat hadeshen, they'd put them on the floor and they'd get swallowed up into the ground. You take the rest of this mincha and you do the same thing with that over there. You put it over there. You don't burn it, but you put it on the floor.
Did you say this way?
According to Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon, yes.
Not according to Rabbanan.
According to Reb Shimon, no. According to Reb Shimon, you're supposed to burn the rest of it on the mezbeach. So the Tanya, Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon, a koymet karev la'atma, you burn the koymet of this minchas chote on the mezbeach, v'ashirai, mispazun, albeit adeshen, and the remainder of it you throw onto the place, you scatter on the place over there where you put the ashes. So therefore, according to that, the same thing you do over here with this person who's a Sofik Koyan, Sofik Yisrael. He's not bringing a minchas koyter. The mincha he's bringing over here is a minchas nedava. But you do the same kind of thing. You know, you can't burn the rest of it on the mezbeach according to everybody except Rebbe Eliezer, because you're not allowed to, because we have the Baal Tehtiru thing that we said before. So instead, you put it on the place of the deshen. V'afilu Rabbanan, like Pligi Aleidu Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon, Elav Minchas Koyter Shokayim Debat Hakrovi. Even Rebbe Shimon, who's disagreeing with his son Rebbe Elazar over there, he says you're right. He says you don't do that when it comes to a minchas koyter of a definite koyim. Because it is something that normally is brought on the mezbeach. But over here, since it's a matter of a sofik and you have no choice, I feel the rabbanon may do that. Even the rabbanon, meaning Reb Shimon, will agree that it's fine because you have no real choice. Actually, the Aruch HaNer has an interesting take on it. He says that actually there'd be a difference if you're talking over here, this would work if he's bringing a minchas chayte, because then you can follow Rabbi Elazar and Reb Shimon's opinion. What if he's bringing a minchas nedava? Why should we assume the same rule applies to a minchas nedava? So he says an interesting thing. If one of these two people is bringing a minchas nedava, fine, you know what you do. Tell the other person to bring a minchas nedava as well. Then what we do is the kohen will bring one of them on behalf of one of them, the other on behalf of the other. Like, you know, this one is in case this person is a kohen, or in case he's Yisrael, the other one, same thing, and then you can treat them both as a minchas kohen. Well, actually, no, you can treat one as a minchas koyin, one as a minchas Yisrael. One of these is definitely on behalf of a koyin, so the whole thing gets burnt on the mezbeach. One of them is definitely on behalf of a Yisrael, so the koyin will eat the rest. We don't know which one is for which person, but okay, it was a minchas nedava. It's, you know.
The one who's the koyin,
we don't know which one, but we know that one of these two people is a koyin. No, because he himself is not eating it, we're saying the other koyin eat it. But by minchas choyte, you can't do that, because you can't bring a minchas choyte as an adava. You can only bring it if you actually did one of these avodas. So therefore, you have no choice but to do what we're saying in the Gemara over here.
Minchas nedava, other kohanim.
The other, yeah.
Because of the
suffix. Right. Mishnah says, more of these cases of mix-ups. Mishalai shasa acha baila shloisha chadashim. We learned in a previous perek, we learned a couple of months ago, that after a woman is widowed or divorced, she has to wait 3 months before she remarries.
Right.
In case she's pregnant, you want to be able to know whether the baby is from her first or second husband. So now he or she didn't. She remarried. She had a baby. Now we don't know if this baby is a 7 month baby from the first, from a 9 month baby from the first husband, or a 7 month baby from the second one. So what do we do? Suppose that also she has other sons from her first marriage and other sons from her second marriage. So this boy is a suffix, whether he's a brother to the one group or to the other group. All of them would have to do, if he dies, all of them would have to do, or one from each group, whatever, would have to do chalitza to his wife, but they can't do yibum, because it might turn out that one or the other, that the members of one or the other group are brothers of his only from the mother's side. They're also to his wife, it's an erva. But they have to do chalitza in case they're brothers of his from the father's side. Same thing the other way around. If one of the boys from one of the other sides dies, he can only do chalitza with the wives. He can't do yibum. Same idea. What happens if the suffix had brothers from the first marriage and brothers from the second marriage, from the first husband and from the second husband, that don't have the same mother? So in other words, this woman was married twice. One time she was married to Avraham, one time she was married to Yitzchak. Avraham and Yitzchak previously had been married to other women and had other children with them. So now this suffix, he might be a brother from the father's side to one group or to the other. But therefore that's not a problem. Who cholitz and miyabim behem? Echad cholitz, echad miyabim. When it comes him to them, he can do either chalitza. He can do chalitza, or he can do either chalitza or yibum, because he can do chalitza to any of his potential half brothers from the first husband. If it's his brother, then he did chalitza. If not, then she's unrelated to him, and he's allowed to marry her. Rashi points out you have to be talking about that there was only one other brother from the other side. Otherwise, if there's more than one brother, then there might be a zikah from them. V'heim echad cholitz v'echad miyabim. As far as them, what you do is from the two brothers from the two sides, one of them does chalitza, and the other one then can do yibum. Because again, you've covered all your bases. If the first one was really his brother, then he did chalitza. Now she can marry whoever she wants. If the first one wasn't his brother from his father's side, then the chalitza was nothing, and the other one is doing a proper yibum. What happens now if these two husbands, one of them was a Yisrael, one of them was a Kayin? So we have the same din. There's the same din as in the previous Mishnah. This boy has to marry a woman, can only marry a woman who a Kayin is allowed to marry. You can't marry a Grusha, for example. He's not allowed to become Tamim Mes. But if he does become Tamim Mes, he doesn't get Malkus because it's a Suffolk. He's not allowed to eat truma. But if he does, he does not have to pay the keren v'chaymish to the kohen, because we're not sure whether he's a kohen. Yeah. And he's not get a portion of truma in the granaries, because he might be a kohen, he might not. When he has produce of his own, he can sell the truma to kohen. He doesn't have to give it to them for free, because he himself might be a kohen. And he can keep the money, because if a kohen comes to claim it, he can say, prove that I'm not a kohen. He does not get a portion of the kachim, because he's a suffix. We mentioned yesterday the two explanations of Rashi, what this means. Either it means that if he has a korban of his own to bring, he's allowed to appoint a shliach, a kohen, to bring it on his behalf, or wait for the mishmer, or whatever it is. Or the other explanation is, people, you don't give him a bechor, because he may not be a kohen. The shliach would be makri with them, according to that. Yes. You don't give him kachim. Again, according to these two explanations, either you don't give him kachim to bring as a korban, because he may not be a kohen, or you don't give him bechoros. The ain metzi and a shalom yodid, but if he has a bechor of his own, you don't take it away from him. He's potter from giving the portions from an animal, from a shechted animal, that you have to give a kohen. Same idea. But if he has a bechor, an animal, a bechor, then he does not have to give it to the kohen. Instead, he can wait, he can leave it to pasture till it develops a mum, and then he can eat it. We apply to him the chumras of kohenim and of Yisraelim, which means, like we said on Amud Aleph, the whole business about his kohen. Hayu shneim kohenim. What about another case? If both of this woman's husbands were kohenim. So now we know for a fact, obviously, this child is a kohen, whether he's from the first or from the second, he's definitely a kohen. So then, who oinin aleihem v'heim oinin an olav? So if either of them dies, then he has to consider himself an oinin, because it might have been his father. So therefore, for example, he's not allowed to eat truma at that point, or kodshim rather. V'heim oinin, because it's a suffix, he might be an oinin. When one or the other of them dies,
temporarily,
they're buried. Yeah, the heim olav. Similarly, if he dies, both of them have to be considered oinanim on his behalf till he's buried. Who einim etamim lahem? The heim einim etamim loyv. But he cannot become tamei for them, and they can't become tamei for him, because we're not sure whether either of them is his father or whether he's either of their son. Who ain't a Yodashai? Son, he does not inherit from either of them, because if he goes to, when one of them dies, or when both of them die, he goes to the one set of heirs, count me in for the Yodashai, who says you might be the son from the other one, and vice versa. Avalheim Yoshinai said, but if he dies childless, then the two of them split his inheritance, because then you have the case where it's Momin Amutal Basafik, the property is standing there Basafik, neither one has any more of a Chazaka over the other. So therefore, they split it. What about Pidyon? Pidyon Aben is not, you don't do Pidyon Aben for the son of a Kohen anyway.
No, I know, but can he be a Kohen in a Pidyon Aben?
Probably not. No, in this case, yeah, because we know for sure he's a Kohen. Actually, yeah. But we're going to see in the Gemara, actually, it's not so simple. He will be Potter. Now, the Torah says that if a person hits and then wounds his father or his mother or curses them, then he's chayiv misa. But in this case, if he hits or curses either of these men, he's not chayiv misa because we don't know which one is his father. That's true. Right. The Ne'or Choner asks why it mentions specifically in the case of Kohenim over here. It could have mentioned it in the previous case. It could have mentioned it in the case where one's a Kohen, one's a Yisrael. I think he says that actually one idea is, given that we said who onen alem behem onen or olav, that we consider each of them an onen on the other one, we might have thought that therefore maybe we should apply some of these dinim also, but we don't. Oylev b'mishmar shalzeh, he counts towards the mishmar of one and of the other, which we'll talk about in the Gemara tomorrow what that means exactly. But on the face of it, it sounds like the Mishnah is saying if one of them belongs to the Mishmah of Yehoyariv, the first Mishmah, and the second one belongs to the Mishmah of Yediah, the second Mishmah, then he can work in both Mishmaris and the Beis Mikdash. The question is how. It's one or the other. So we'll get to that in the Gemara tomorrow. The Ein Cholek, but he does not get to divide the Kachim with either of them, because again, either one of each one, Yediah can say you belong to Yehoyariv, Yehoyariv can say you belong to Yediah. But if both of these Kohenim, both of his mother's husbands, were Tzafik, which one he's a son, if they both belong to one Mishmer, then fine, he gets one portion of that Mishmer, of the Kavanos that are brought during the week of that Mishmer, because we know he belongs to that Mishmer. Now, in the first case of the Mishnah, where we said that, the second case, we said where he had brothers, he had potential brothers from his father's side on both sides, from both the first husband and the second. We said that if he dies, one brother from one side does chalitza, and one brother from the other side can then do yibum. So again, davka michlat v'hadu yibumi, it has to be in that order, first chalitza, then yibum, avo yibumi b'resh aloi, but again, they can't do yibum first. Same reason, kapoga b'yivama l'shuk, because it might turn out that she's a yivama and she's marrying outside the family. Omar Shmuel says a general din like this, asar koinim omdim, if you have 10 koinim standing in one place, upirish echad mehem uval, and one of them leaves the group and goes and has relations with a woman outside of marriage, have lodge suki. We consider this child to be, we don't know which of the 10 it was. So in other words, this woman had relations with one of these 10 Kohenim, we don't know which one. So we consider the child a Shsuki. No, that would be a Sufi. Shsuki, we had before the discussion, the usual meaning of Shsuki is that we know who his mother is, we don't know who his father is, and therefore he's a Sufik Mamzer. The problem with that is, how can we say he's a Suffolk Mamzer? We know one of his father. We know one of whoever his father is. It's a Kohen. He's not a Mamzer. So my Shtuki. What do we mean? He's a Shtuki. Ilei Meshem Shakim Oitzim Nichse Aviv. Do we mean that we silence him? We do not allow him to inherit his father's property? Pshita. Via Dinan Abu Amanu. Of course, we don't know who his father is. If he goes to any of these 10 and tries to claim the property, of course the heirs can tell him you have no business here. Ella, what it means is Shemashat Kenosim Adin Kahuna. It means we silence him from the dinim of Kahuna. We do not allow him to serve in the Beis Mikdash. He is considered a Kohen, so he's definitely going to have to marry a woman who is mutter to a Kohen. He's definitely not allowed to be Matamil Lames, etc. He has all the dinim of a Kohen, but we do not allow him to serve in the Beis Mikdash. My timer, Omakra, because the Pasuk says, V'hoysa loyal Zare Achra, the Pasuk says about Pinchas, that the Kahuna will be for him and his descendants after him. Meaning, but in Zarem, Yuchas Achra Veleka. You have to have that the child has a Yuchas after him. You have to know whose father this child is, Veleka, and here we don't have it. No, but the fact that we don't know who his father is, that's not Zare Acharov. It's not after him. Maska for the Papa. So the Papa says, if that's what the word Zare Acharov means, Elameata Gabri Avraham. And what about, you have a similar expression by Avraham, that I'll be to you for God and for your children after you. What exactly is the Torah telling Avraham? What exactly would the Torah be telling Avraham? What case is there over there? Forget that, but we know obviously all of Avraham's children, we know they're his children. So what is the Eibishter warning against? The answer is Hachi Kamalei. In that case, what the Torah is telling him is something else. The Eibishter is telling him, Don't go marry a goita or shivcha. Because you don't want your children to be considered after who. We know we've discussed already a few times in the Masechta that the children of a goita or of a shivcha have the same status as their mother. The Ibishter is warning Abraham, don't do that. Now, Marsha asks the question, Abraham married Hagar. She was a shivcha. How does that fit with this? So Marsha answers, very simple. When he married her, he freed her. She wasn't a shivcha anymore. The Aruch HaNer asks on that, what are you talking about? We see afterwards the Torah calls her Shivcha Sarai. And so the answer is very simple. When did Abraham marry Hagar? When he was 85. When did they have Yishmael? When he was 86. When is the Abish telling him this him? When he was 99. 13 years later. So yes, after that, Abraham stopped having relations with her. Up until then, he didn't think there was a problem. Now the Abish is telling him, I want Mazaracha Acharecha, that all your children should be Yochas after you. Good. He says, in that case, I'm not being with her anymore. Rashi says that Keturah is Hagar, and he married her later. Then she was definitely a Meshuchareres by that point. Once Abraham sent her away with Yishmael, and then in Parshas Vayera over there, then he freed her. And especially after, when did he marry Keturah? Only after Sarah died, and at that point, her mistress is dead anyway, so then for sure, she's free anyway.
He loved her, the Midrash says.
Anyway, so yes, so Lazare Achrav means that the Ebishter wants that the children, in the case of the Kohen, that they know who their father is, and in the case of Abraham, that they should have a father, because as we've discussed, the children of a Goyen, of a Jewish man and a Goyish woman are considered Goyen. They're not considered to have a father. Okay, Maestri, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. Shmuel is telling us that a child who we don't know for sure who his father is can't work as a Kohen. We learned earlier in the Masechta, we have the case similar to our Mishnah, where somebody did Yibum within the 3 months, where, even though he wasn't supposed to, but he did. And we said that if the two of them were Kohenim, we said Rishon Roi Lias Kohen Gadol. The first child was born. We don't know who his father is. We're not sure if he's from the first brother or the second, but he's capable even of being a Kohen Gadol. As opposed to the second one, we said is a Sophic Mamzer, at least, because we're not sure, because if she had children from the first marriage, then she's an heir to her brother-in-law. What? If he's a child from the first one, yeah, then the second one is a Mamzer. But the first one is capable of being a Kohen Gadol. You have to have a coin to Shmuel that's Miyuchas, and you don't have here. You don't know who his father is. The answer is, Zare Miyuchas Achrav Dirabanan. It's not. This that we're saying that it has to be Miyuchas, Shmuel's din, is a din Dirabanan. Ukras Machtab Alma. The Pasuk is only, it's not a Xeris Akasiv. The Pasuk we're only using as an Asmachta, as a support for this din Dirabanan. When did the Rabbanan make this Xerah of Shmuel? Only when you have a case of Znus. Like in this case, he had one of these 10 Kohenim went and had relations with this woman outside of marriage. Whereas in a case of marriage, even though she wasn't supposed to have done Yibum within the 3 months, she was over on a Tekanas Chachamim, but still we're not going there to pass all her child from Kohona. We will allow him to work as a Kohen, and he could even end up being a Kohen Gadol. Question is, the Gemara asks, "Was Nus Migozer Abanon? Really, did the Chachamim really make that Zera by a case of Nus? Vatnan, what about our Mishnah? Mishalei Shasa Achabayla Shleishal Adashim Menitzis V'Yolda. We said that a woman who didn't wait after her husband for 3 months, and then she remarried, and she had children. Now we have to ask ourselves, what do we mean, my Achabayla? What do you mean after her husband? What happened to her first marriage? Ilei Ma'achal Misas Bayla. Do you mean after her first husband died? Can't be. Ema Sefer, who earned Aleim, Vayim earned Olav. The later part of the Mishnah mentioned that this child, he has to be an Oinen Mesafik on either of them, and they have to be an Oinen, and they have to be Oinen on him. So Bishleim, who earned Aleim, Ashkachas Labin Yisurin, Desheni. So okay, when he say who earned Aleim, we can understand the Mishnah doesn't mean literally that he's an Oinen on both of them, because according to that, the first one died before he was ever born, he's not an Oinen on him. But okay, Oinen Aleim means he'll have to be an Oinen Mesafik on the second one, just in case the second one is his father. But what do you mean? That both of them have to be owning him on him. We can understand like this. We can say that when the second one dies, he has to be an owning on him. And now we learned in Moed Katan in particular that in those days what they used to do is when a person died, they would bury him in a temporary grave. afterwards, after the body decayed and all that's left is the bones, they collect the bones and put them in a box. And then bury them that way. So and the din is, when you're doing the liquid tatsamos, you're also, that's considered a minor avelos, and you're an onan temporarily until the bones are reburied. So fine, then, you can have this boy, the first person who's potentially his father died before he was born, but now, years later, you're doing liquid tatsamos, so he'd be an onan for him at that time. And the second one, when the second one dies, then he has to be a real onan for him. Do we understand that? What do you mean both of them are owning him for him? The first one is dead already. The grusha. So do you mean the case, are you talking about that the woman is a grusha? What do you mean that her first husband divorced her and she remarried? Well then, who in the time of Lahem, Amen, in time in life? We're saying he can't become Tommy Mess for either of them because he might be, because we don't know which one is his father. Neither of them can be Matame for him. The Shlema Hainan Matame in life Chumra. So, okay, neither of them can be Matame for him as a matter of a Chumra. Each one is not sure whether this is his son. He can't be Matame for a stranger. It means that each one, you're not sure whether this child is his son. He can't be Matame for another person who's not a member of your family. Ella, who ain't matame lahem, but why shouldn't he be able to be matame for them? If his mother is a grusha, am I? Bishleim l'sheni lo matame le. Okay, I can understand that in case he's the child of the first one, he should be matame for the second one. Ella l'rishon matame le manavshach. He should be able to become tamei mes for the first one, however you look at it. Ibrehu shapu kamatame le. If he's his son, he's allowed to be matame for him. V'ibabastruhu, and if he's the son of the second one, he's the son of a grusha. Shapu kamatame le. He can be matame for anybody he wants. D'cholohu. He's a cholo. His mother is a grusha. Ella lav is nus. So obviously it must be a case of nus. Umay achabayla achabayla. What do we mean? Not that his mother was married to the first man. His mother had relations with the first man outside of marriage. Then she went and was mizana with the second woman, with the second man as well. And I'm not sure which one he's from. And the Mishnah continues that he belongs to both Mishmaris, meaning that he can work as a kohen in both Mishmaris. Even though he's born from his nus, which you have to Shmuel. So that would be a contradiction to Shmuel. By the way, when the Gemara says, because Shmuel says that in the case of Znus, Bishat Kenos Midin Gona, you don't allow him to work in the Kayet. Incidentally, by the way, when we're saying over here Znus, the question is, do we mean Davka, the first one, obviously, it had to be a matter of Znus. Is it that the second one married her, or is it the second one is also Znus? So the Mephoshim on Shulchan Aruch, on Evan Ezer, discussed that. The Noitzer Kalim discussed that. On the one hand, you could argue if she's married to the second husband, maybe we should consider that this child definitely belongs to the second husband. The usual rule is, we assume a married woman, any of her children belong to her husband. On the other, so maybe only in a case of Znus would it be an issue. On the other hand, maybe not. In this case, a matter of suffix of paternity, where we're not sure if she was already pregnant when she married the second one, maybe there shouldn't be a difference whether it's a matter of marriage or Znus. If they don't know, actually, Paskins, that it doesn't really matter whether the second one was married or Znus. Either way, he's not allowed to work as a cut-in. But,
because
there is Znus involved over here. But, yeah. So, we'll continue with the answer tomorrow, but it's a shame.